Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
And welcome back to Raising the Bets. It seems like we were just sitting here doing this.
Yes. Just like the other day.
I think of like couples who've been doing this for like a decade, like Mac and Catherine Barron, or Greg and Jennifer Willits. Like, they've literally been like doing podcasts for more than a decade. And it's amazing to me that over that time. But I don't think I can ever run out of things to talk about. This is the foundation of our relationship.
Pretty much. I married you because you were like the one guy I've met who I would never run out of things to talk about.
She married me for my looks. And right. It's because I could talk. You found an Italian. So what's going on? What are we doing? What have we done? We're in the doldrums of winter, folks. We haven't even had a good snowstorm to talk about.
No, it's been boring.
Although, as we record this is the fifth anniversary of the beginning of the winter from hell.
I thought that was a few days ago.
No, today is, it took place over 3 days. The snow fell over the course of 3 days. So this was the middle day. The middle day. It was the 26th, 27th, 28th. And we got 2 to 3 feet of snow. I forget exactly. The maps I saw today said 2 to 3 feet. And we would get snow nearly every Monday, like a foot to 2 feet, every Monday through February.
It was crazy.
It was nuts. And I forgot this. It was the first storm that broke the snowblower.
Yes.
Like, when you have 2 to 3 feet of snow at the end of your driveway, hard packed by the... We talked about this, the whole end of the driveway thing. Without a snowblower, that's heart attack snow. I mean, that winter nearly broke me. Like, physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally.
Yeah, pretty much.
By the end of it, I was like, I'm done. I'm just going to drive somewhere else. 5 years ago, I'm still suffering the after effects of it.
Post-traumatic stress.
not to minimize anyone's real post-traumatic stress, but that was that was a bad winter. I never want to have another winter like that. So I'm not sad that we haven't gotten much snow.
I'm a little sad.
I know. You're from Texas, though, so it's a thing. You know, I get it. I mean, there's still a small part of me, that childlike glee that wasn't completely crushed and killed by that winter, where I still hear, when I hear, like, oh, we're getting a foot. I'm like, oh, that's the part.
Snow day!
Yeah, snow day, yay! Not that I sit here at the desk every day, so I don't get a day off. But it's like that small part that goes, yay! And then that other part that goes, you're going to have to shovel that, right? but as the kids are getting older, they're helping, so that's good. All right, so no snow. Let's talk about what we've been doing. All right, okay, folks, buckle up, because this is going to be riveting podcasting. We're going to tell you about when we cleaned out the lint pipes for the dryer. No, seriously.
You think we're kidding.
I'm not kidding, but I think it's actually kind of funny. So... This house, when we bought this house, it had been renovated between the last owner and us. Somebody flipped it. Somebody bought it, renovated,
yes.
And
they did not flip. Like, they did not pour a lot of money into the renovations when they flipped this house.
It was not an expensive house. It was actually a lesser expensive house than ones we'd looked at. It was good. That's how we could afford it. And they used cheap carpeting. Cheap paint, like the sort of paint. Whereas if you try to wash the wall, the paint comes off.
Oh, the paint was horrible. It's awful.
Water-soluble paint. Yeah. We repainted most of it, I think. At this, but there's still a few walls where
we haven't done the office or the pantry yet.
Okay, those are still the original, but we haven't had occasion to worry about that too much. The floor, the press, what is it? The wooden floor. It's not real wood. It's the press board.
The faux wood floor.
Faux wood floor that slid around like one of those puzzle pieces.
The ones where you slide the little tiles and try to get, you know,
move the blank space. Yeah, we had the blank space.
We
replaced that a few years ago. I got my brother to do that. What other things? All of the... one of the things that bugged me was that all of the outlets are upside down.
I don't even notice that anymore.
Yeah, well, someone told me, no, that's what you do when you renovate. You put the outlets in upside down. It's an indicator that they're renovation outlets. I'm like, why does it even matter? But apparently it's a thing. I had been flipping them back around as I had need to over the years.
Okay.
Because certain plugs, the outlet is shaped so that the cord bends like an L and falls down.
Right.
And so if it has to go up, the cord is like pulling it out of the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so
bad.
Anyway. But one of the big things was the placement of the washer and the dryer. And the washer and the dryer are at opposite ends of the
right.
laundry room.
Right, because originally it had a garage with the washer-dryer connections in the garage, obviously. And then the garage had been renovated into a bedroom.
Yes, half of the garage.
Half the garage. And then
quarters of the garage.
Right, and then the small section of the garage had been made into a laundry room, which was carpeted. This is really, really not...
Brilliant.
Smart.
Yeah.
But so they stuck the washing machine into the side that was closest to the kitchen.
Because the water's over there.
Right.
Yeah, that's where the water intake is.
Right.
But also, it drains
into the kitchen sink drain. Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know how or whether it ever passed inspection, but that's a big no-no, apparently, which we found out once.
Oh, yeah, because the pipes underneath the kitchen is just like this horrible...
Under the sink, yeah.
Under the sink, or like this horrible kludge of like things
PVC
just...
piping.
It's just, it's horrible.
We had a plumber see it once, and he just said, I know nothing, I see nothing, I am going to fix whatever's here and move on. Like, because it would be a mess to fix it. I'm not even going to get into what's going on in the bathroom. Because, it's a whole other story. And then the dryer is on the other side of the room for some reason. Oh, because that's where the electrical panel is, and they didn't want to run the electrical for the circuit probably too far, I guess.
Something. It's...
And so when you have a dryer, the lint outlet, the air outlet, is supposed to go out directly out the wall behind the dryer, right? And it's supposed to be fairly short and end in a little housing... with a flapper so that animals can't get in. That's what you definitely don't want that happening. And weather, it's protected from the weather. But you also don't want it to, fill of lint because, fire. Well, what these geniuses did was that they on the outside of the house behind where the dryer is, there is a little lean-to shed thingy. It's storage space. It's because we don't have any storage space in this house. So it's very little storage space. And so you can't vent into the storage space. So the vent pipe comes out of the wall.
Into the storage space.
Turns right. Heads toward the wall of the storage space. And then kind of jogs a little to the left. There's a couple of jogs in it because there's a support right there. So you have to jog a little bit. I don't know what they were thinking. But it's terrible because that means that all these corners will catch lint and it will fill full lint. And so we've been worried for years about what's building up in there. It's really dangerous.
Right.
So
yeah, and the dryer has been like not happy with me recently. So I started with I just got to take the lint screen frame off so I can pull it all the way out and clean all the stuff that's fallen like out of the lint screen and into the bottom part of the dryer.
Right.
So I did that and there was a lot.
So that was good.
There was a lot of lint in there and I pulled a whole bunch out. I had to like take off my watch and stick my hand in there. I probably should have got a small child to do it.
There was a bunny in there.
and to make matters worse, our vacuum cleaner hose wouldn't fit down into there because it was too big. And so I'm like wrestling with trying to get the vacuum cleaner down into the lint slot thing. And it was kind of a mess.
So,
and then we figured while we had everything moved away from the dryer for this process, We might as well
clean the lint pipe on the other
side too. Yeah.
So I went outside and I took the little cover off, and I'm looking in there. I'm trying to reach in as best as I can, but I can't really get very far. And so I'm like, all right, I had to take it apart. So I took it off the wall, this whole giant pipe. And I'm like shoving sticks in there and all kinds of stuff in there because it's got these corners. So you got to get it in. It's got to be stiff enough to push the lint, but bendable enough to go around the corners, which is a very tricky proposition, and big enough to catch stuff. So I got a couple big clumps came out. Not a lot. It wasn't stuffed. So that's good.
Oh, I forgot to mention that what triggered this was I went outside to enjoy some sunlight with the kids, and I noticed that under the outside vent, there was lint, like, spread on the ground, like it had been blowing lint out.
But that's to be expected. Like, you do expect the lint to come out of that pipe.
Well, there was a lot, and yes. that made me sort of scared, like, how much is stuck in the pipe?
It reminded us that we did need to check it.
Yeah.
The good thing is there wasn't as much lint in there as we...
As we feared. Right.
Now, to get the pipe back in the hole, so you had to hold it from the outside of the house and push against it so that I had some resistance to sliding the hose from the dryer on and then doing the zip tie that holds it there. It's like a collar sort of thing. I remember when your dad helped us when we moved in, and he's the one.
He helped to install the dryer.
Yeah, well, your dad did it. And I stood next to him looking like I wanted to help, but there was no opportunity for me to help. But if I'd gone outside, and took him a long time. If I'd gone outside and done what you'd done and pushed against it from the other side, it would have been a whole lot easier for him. But I didn't know that at the time. So,
right.
Now, the thing that's kind of, you know, frustrating is that this dryer is on the way out.
It really is on the way out. It squeaks. It's got a gap between the drum and the side of the dryer so that
clothes get caught in.
Yeah, like socks and underwear and stuff get caught.
So you open up the dryer and there's always a pennant hanging there.
It's horrible.
So usually one of the kids' underwear. And yeah, it makes this horrible squeaking noise because the balance is now bent and out of balance. It's not really cleaning very well. So I'm going to have to get a new dryer at some point. I looked up on the Wirecutter, my favorite website for reviewing products,
mm-hmm.
and their pick is a Maytag.
What is the one that we've got?
I think it's a Maytag or Whirlpool. Right. Or
I mean, because we replaced the washer that we got at the same time as the dryer some years ago.
Yeah, several years ago.
So the washer is much newer than the dryer. I suppose that's to be expected.
10 years is a long time for any appliance these
days. It's more than 10 years. It's at least 11 years.
So 11, 12 years almost. Yeah, 11 years. Because
It'll be 12 years in November.
November 2008. Yeah. 12 years in November. Wow. So it's just over 11 years. So that's a long time. We've gotten a lot of use out of that. So yeah. $600 later, we're going to have another a dryer, I think. Something, it's like 600 something. This is the thing is we bought all these appliances at the same time and they're all going to go at the same time.
Refrigerator, the dryer, the washing machine, dishwasher.
Once the dryer gets replaced, I think we'll go all set. The washing machine, I mean the dishwasher, is a little iffy at the moment.
But the dishwasher is actually newer.
It is, but it's like 5 years old at this point. That's about as long as the previous dishwasher lasted.
I suppose.
We do a lot of dishes.
We do a lot of dishes.
Seven people. So, but I still, you know, God bless those. I would use the Southern expression, bless their heart, those renovators who sold us this house. Bless their hearts.
Yes.
All right. So let's move on to something else.
So that was our Sunday.
That was our Sunday afternoon was spent in the guts of lint. And
But then I was concerned because I had promised on Saturday that on Sunday I was going to make muffins because two of our children primarily eat muffins for breakfast.
That's all they'll eat.
Right. So I spent so much time on the dryer and then vacuuming up the laundry room was a mess and it needed to be cleaned and decluttered and stuff. So it was a project. And then I looked at the clock and I said, I've got to make dinner and muffins and I've got about 2 hours to do it in. And the kids were begging to watch Star Wars. And so I said, if I get the muffins in the oven in 20 minutes, y'all can watch Star Wars.
Which meant they had to help.
So I had three girls running around the kitchen. While I was barking orders at them, I had the recipe in my hand and I was just going down the recipe. And I'm like, okay, you get this, you get that, you get this, you measure this, you measure that, you get that, you get that, you do that, you do that.
She was Gordon Ramsay in them.
It was awesome.
She was calling donkeys.
And they were all in because they really, really wanted to watch Star Wars.
Clone Wars. The animated series Clone Wars, right. And the animated series Rebels.
Yeah. They really, really wanted to watch it. They'd been in, Bella had been almost in tears, like, because I had said she couldn't watch it. And I'm like, okay, I will change my mind on this if you help. So not only did they get the muffins in the oven in 20 minutes, but then they also did a lot of my prep work for dinner, too. They got all the ingredients out while I went through the recipe for dinner, too.
We had curry.
We had curry.
Chicken curry.
Yeah. So they went to the pantry, the refrigerator, the everything. They got all the ingredients. Bella started the rice.
Oh, don't give the job of making rice to the distracted girl.
Yeah, unfortunately, she put in one extra cup of rice, so it was a little on the crunchy side, but it was edible. It was edible.
So the lesson here is, if you lose count of how many cups of whatever you've put in, start over. Don't just say,
the problem,
that's probably the right amount.
The problem was that she realized that she'd lost count
after she
started to put the water in. Like, as the water is going in, she's like, oh, wait, did I put 5 cups or 6 cups?
To be fair, I've done this with other things. I've done this with pancakes, for instance.
I have done it myself with the rice, right, and other things. I have had to empty all the rice back into the bin and recount because I lost count.
It's like a Clint Eastwood moment. So you have to wonder to yourself,
do you feel lucky?
Five shots, maybe five or six. Do you feel lucky, Bunk? Well, do ya?
Yeah,
that's, we felt lucky. Actually, apart from the very top of the rice, which was the part that was most exposed, the water left first, which was a little crunchy, the rest of it was edible.
Yeah,
so
it was fine.
It was fine.
So we ended up, you know, being pretty successful with with getting the kids to do prep work.
Speaking of watching Star Wars Rebels,
yeah.
So it was a particularly scary episode with the Grand Inquisitor hunting down Ezra, and Lucy was so, the poor thing was so scared.
She is petrified of the Grand Inquisitor. He is like her bete noire. She
more than Darth Vader, more than the Emperor.
Right, like to what Darth Vader was to us when we were kids. Yes. The Grand Inquisitor is to Lucy. Poor thing.
I had nightmares about Darth Vader when I was a kid.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, totally.
It was wicked scary.
Oh yeah.
He became whiny Anakin, and then he lost all his scariness.
Right. See, I wonder if like Darth Vader is less scary to kids these days because they've like seen Anakin. The prequels, yeah. Right?
Maybe if they had the like baby Grand Inquisitor, like baby Yoda.
maybe.
Actually. No spoilers, but something you find out something later on in the Clone Wars, the Rebels series that makes the Grand Inquisitor a little less scary.
Well, in any case, we ended up having last night at like 11 o'clock. I was doing laundry, and Lucy came into the laundry room and needed some cuddles and snuggles and reassurance because she thought she hadn't fallen asleep. She had fallen asleep. I had seen her asleep in her bed, but she couldn't get back to sleep, and I am pretty sure it was some Grand Inquisitor fears. So I put on an extra nightlight for her.
Nobody expects the Grand Inquisition.
Oh my. I got her a little set of mini Christmas lights, like little LED battery lights. Unfortunately, I thought this was brilliant. Like, lights, add some extra light to the room, and then she won't be so scared and she'll go to sleep. Unfortunately, 10 minutes after I put the lights on, Sophie comes stalking out of the bedroom.
Oh, Kylo Ren was here.
Yeah. She was wearing her best Kylo Ren impersonation face, and she was not happy. She could not sleep with the lights on.
These little tiny fairy lights.
Yeah. So I feel 100% sympathy for Sophie because that's me. I cannot sleep with lights on. And I think I gave the same like Kylo Ren impersonation to a couple of my college roommates. Like, if my roommate was up late, well, that too.
Yeah.
But if my roommate was up studying and I could maybe sometimes fall asleep with the lights on, but then at some point, like an hour or so later, I would wake up and I...
Ever consider a sleep mask?
Couldn't. No, I can't sleep with a sleep mask on. It's just, no, uncomfortable thing on my face.
This would be the solution I would suggest to Sophie, and she would be the same way.
Exactly. She's very much like me. I actually ended up leaving it as a Mexican standoff. I tried to like drape some cloth around the
Sophie's bed.
Around the basket in which I'd put the fairy lights. And Sophie was not happy. It's still too bright. And I'm like, I could put up a sheet around your bed because she sleeps in the bottom bunk. No, that's not acceptable. And I finally said, look, it's late. I'm going to bed. You guys can work it out amongst yourselves. And I walked out of the room and I never heard back from them again. So I guess
they both survived to the morning.
They survived till morning and they didn't kill each other.
So, yeah, there's some maturity going on there, so I think. So that's good. In previous times, that may not have ended so well.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some school stuff, some homeschool stuff. We've been working on how best to move forward. One of the things about homeschooling, I don't know, it's not that I didn't realize it, but that has always interested me is it is a constantly changing animal, the homeschool.
Right.
Because the kids are constantly changing and getting older. But the challenges are constantly changing. And how do I accomplish the goal? And now we've got 5 kids that are all learning different things all at once. And one of you. And how do we do this?
Right. One of me, 5 of them, they're all at different levels from 1st grade through 8th grade. It's a challenge.
It is a challenge.
So one of my big challenges is that the littlest ones take up the most time because they drag their feet and they don't want to do the work. They drag their feet. You have to remind them to get started, like get dressed, eat breakfast, get started, get your math books out. No, come away from the Legos. No, come away from the jigsaw puzzle. Come back and do your work.
Come back to the table.
And I'm so tired of riding herd on them. And then It shortchanges the 2 older girls who are in 6th and 8th grade who really should be getting more attention from me because they're doing higher level work. And they're getting shortchanged. So I came up with a solution desperately. It was Sunday night, right? We're laying in bed, we're talking, and I'm like, how am I going to solve this problem? I'm just so frustrated. I end up yelling at them all the time. And I feel bad, but I'm just really frustrated. And so I came up with a solution. I taped $1 bills.
What if I bribed them?
Bribed them. Yes. I like to think of it as, you know, incentivizing.
Gave them economic
positive reinforcement with a very short-term gain.
Yes.
So I taped $1 bills up on the whiteboard. And I said, if you get your schoolwork done by 10 o'clock, and I don't have to keep reminding you about what you're supposed to be doing, you can have this dollar bill.
It's potentially $5 a day.
$5 a week.
Well, $5 a day for all of
them. Oh, you mean for our expense.
Our expense is potentially $5 a day, $25 a week, $100 a month. That's not chicken feed. I'm not sure that's a long-term sustainable.
Right.
We'd have to look at where we could.
Then again,
the budget. Where.
They're not getting any allowance.
Right. So, yeah. I mean,
It's meant to be a short term sort of let's build some habits. Right. And I told them that from the get go. Like, this is not going to be forever. You're not going to like always get paid to do your schoolwork.
And we had talked about different ways to teach them the value of a dollar, to give them chores and pay them to do things, but like. There are certain things that you're supposed to do just as a matter of being part of a family and you shouldn't get paid to do.
Right.
And then there are other jobs which are potentially you could get paid to do, except do you make them do it and pay them for it? Or should they want to earn the money? You know, that's very tricky. So, you know, sometimes like, I'll pay someone to hang up all my laundry.
And then that's not like necessarily a reliable source of income for them either, because I don't constantly have those like, I'll give you money to do this jobs
like
laying around.
Shoveling the driveway. We don't get enough snow for that really to be a reliable economic incentive.
Right. And yes, so this seemed like to at least a short-term solution for a short-term problem. Just getting the kids used to doing more of their work without me nagging them to do it.
Yeah.
So in the short term, I started this on what?
last Wednesday?
Last Wednesday, yeah. Tuesday, something. Anyway,
yeah,
sometime last week. And in the short term, it's gone pretty well. I've had more time to get other things done because I've spent less time nagging. It hasn't worked perfectly, but I feel like I'm getting better engagement and more focus from them. And I've also additionally delegated Sophie to do math with Lucy.
Sophie particularly enjoys math. She's particularly adept at it.
Right. And Sophie has the habit, we've probably mentioned this before, of getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning, eating breakfast, and doing her math before everybody else gets up.
Right. Before any of us get up. She's already done.
She's done with her sit-down work.
I get up and I find her sitting in the office by herself, doing nothing, not even reading. I suggested her once, maybe you should get a book or something, and she's like, no, I just like sitting here.
She's telling stories in her head.
Yes, that's what she says. She's making stories in her head.
So anyway, but I have a problem which is that Sophie has a few things that she needs to do with me, but then I can't do them while I'm writing herd on the small kids getting their stuff done.
So she ends up not doing it.
And she ends up sitting there bored, wanting to play, but anything that she plays will distract the other kids from doing their schoolwork. Like, she can't do a jigsaw puzzle because everyone will want to come and do jigsaw puzzles with her. And she can't play with Legos because everyone wants to come and play Legos with her. So she ends up like, well, I'm done with my work, but there's nobody to play with. And I'm bored and I'm annoyed.
And Bella's in the office with me. She's working on Khan Academy math with me.
Right. So what works really well, though, is if I say, Sophie will do math with Lucy, then she's much more focused, because if I'm trying to do Lucy's math, then I'm being interrupted by helping the boys with their math and like other things like that. And so Lucy ends up doing less math per day. When Sophie's writing herd on her, she does like twice as much math in a day as when I'm doing it.
Yes. It's Sophie the taskmaster.
Right.
Although Lucy seems to enjoy it.
And Lucy enjoys it. They're having like a nice bonding time. It's good for Sophie to like review her math facts and stuff.
Sophie, from what I've seen, you see it much more than I do. From what I've seen, she's really actually very kind and solicitous toward her.
She's a good teacher.
Yeah.
And I think it's good for Sophie to have that teaching mentoring relationship. It's good for Lucy to have that relationship with her sister, and it frees me from a task. And Sophie's not sitting around bored waiting for me to get around to doing her lessons with her that need my input.
Yes.
It's a win-win situation, and I'm really pleased with formalizing it, because I've occasionally delegated to Sophie in the past, can you just like do this for me or do that for me with Lucy, but I haven't been consistent with it because I've kind of felt a little bit guilty. But I'm starting to feel less guilty and more like this is actually good for both of them, and it's not just me being lazy, and I'm actually able to give Sophie more time because she's doing things with Lucy. Okay. So she's actually, we've gotten a lot more of her things that she needs to be doing every week done last week than we have in the past.
That's good. That's good. Still got some way to go. Still some bugs to work out, but we're getting there. All right. So let's talk about food, what we've been eating and cooking. Let's talk about one success and one failure.
All right.
Let's talk about the success, the good news first. So last week you made a really nice dish, shrimp and mushrooms in a lemon cream sauce over linguine. It sounds fancy.
It was fancy.
Yeah. I let me say at the top, I told you this looked like and tasted like a restaurant quality dish.
I was pretty pleased.
Yeah. So
it was one of those brainstorms. I was like, I had bought some shrimp on sale when I went to Whole Foods.
Yeah, frozen, pre-cooked stuff. Yeah.
Just frozen, pre-cooked. And I thought this would be a quick meal one night when I didn't feel like I had a lot of time because it was pre-cooked. And so I wouldn't have to do much with it. And then I had also bought some fancy mushrooms, like one of those boxes that has like six different kinds of like gourmet
milky
mushrooms.
Mushrooms and like
shiitake and
what were some of the other ones? I don't even remember what they were called.
Yeah, like there were all sorts of fancy ones. I didn't even know what they were called. It didn't even say on the box. It was just like fancy mushroom blend. And then I had this like craving for lemon. Mm-hmm. And somehow in my brain, like shrimp, lemon mushroom sort of gelled and I in like pasta. And so I just sort of Googled a few recipes, looked at some things, got some ideas, and then sort of went for it.
And then the question then is like, so lemon and wine or lemon and like you could do it like a vodka lemon sauce, like the what's that called? There's an Italian vodka sauce with tomato.
I know the vodka tomato sauce. I don't know vodka lemon sauce.
Maybe I'm thinking the vodka tomato sauce. But just so you could do lemon and wine or lemon and dairy, in this case, cream.
I actually did both. There was wine in the sauce and there was cream. It was a lemon cream sauce, but there was wine in it to add a little bit of sweetness. I really like that sweetness that wine adds, especially with mushrooms. Like mushrooms really are happy with wine.
Yes. And these were really like strongly flavored, not in the sense of like, oh, too powerful, but in the sense of you could taste the mushroom. Like, too often, mushrooms in a strongly flavored dish, they get lost.
Right. Yeah, and you can't really taste the mushroom. Yeah, you taste is the cream, and the mushroom is just a weird texture.
Yeah, this you could taste the mushroom. Right. It was good.
So yeah, I think I sauteed some onions and threw in some garlic and then wine. No, and then mushrooms. And then once they got all soft, I threw in some wine. I let that cook for a little bit. And then I threw in the lemon.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did the cream at the... No, I did the cream first, and then I threw in the lemon at the very end. And I just like barely tossed the shrimp. Oh, and I had some baby spinach.
That's what I was going to mention.
And baby spinach and kale?
Yeah,
or was it just baby spinach?
I think it was just baby spinach, but it was one of those box salad mixes.
Right. And so I just feel...
It was getting, you know, close to when we would have to use it or get rid of it.
Right. So I just threw some handfuls of the baby spinach in there, which added like a nice little bright green.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole dish just... And then I tossed it with the shrimp at the very end so that because they were already cooked.
If I could make one change, I would have waited to throw the spinach in later.
So yeah,
it,
yeah.
Because you know what happens with spinach? It gets cooked and it kind of wilts. And it got a little...
It would have been nice
funky.
If it had been a little bit less wilty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have thrown it like almost at the very end. But yeah, yeah. But the taste was really good and it looked really good. The other thing is this is my big thing with shrimp dishes, is the tails. It's impossible to eat a dish with shrimp tails without, you know, having to put your fingers all in the food. And when there's a sauce, it gets kind of messy. So I should have, I was helping you, I should have pulled the tails off of all the shrimp.
Yeah, yeah. I was just like, I prefer them without the tails, but I did not have, I didn't have time to, this was a like quick, I don't have time meal.
But it was a popular, I think most of the usual suspects liked it, right?
Isabella and Sophia both liked it.
Yeah. Anthony liked it.
Anthony ate one serving, and then he ate plain pasta for the rest.
Yeah.
Ben stuck with plain pasta.
Lucy couldn't
and eat ate
it.
Some and ate yeah. some shrimp. Lucy had some.
She had some plain shrimp.
Plain shrimp and some like I made her some rice noodles.
Yeah, because she can't eat the lemon sauce.
Yeah.
Or the regular pasta.
She can't eat the pasta. She can't eat the cream. I didn't even bother to try to adapt a lemon sauce that she could eat because
right.
it's
made her a separate.
She was happy with okay. peel and eat shrimp.
So that was our success.
Yes.
All right. Then there was tonight.
Tonight
was going to be taco night. Right.
Well,
and this is a mainstay for us. We have tacos all the time.
Yeah. Basically, I opened the... I waited until the last minute to even start and thinking about dinner tonight. It was just one of those days. But I was sure that there was something in the freezer. I wasn't sure what it was. I open up the freezer and there's ground beef. And I'm like, well, everybody likes tacos. I'll have 100% meal. So I grabbed the ground beef, I defrosted it, I started browning it, and I threw in the taco spices, and I'm like, I'm going to town.
And then you asked me to come and make the salsa.
I asked Dom to make the salsa, because we usually have fresh salsa. The kids aren't really big fans of jarred salsa.
So the first snag was, we were out of Rotel. So I've mentioned before, my salsa has diced tomatoes, fire roasted diced tomatoes, so two separate things. So like a big can of diced tomatoes, a smaller can of fire roasted tomatoes and a can of Rotel, which is for Northerners. It's tomatoes. It's mixed with like a jalapeno and some other things. It's sort of pre salsa.
Right. You wouldn't really use it as salsa, but it's
It's like sort of a base salsa. It provides a base set of flavors. I find it just adds a little punch to it.
And you can use it for other things besides salsa. I mean, it's great for like bean dips and stuff. I don't know.
Oh, and again, a queso dip would be great.
Oh yeah, Rotel's awesome. I love it.
And you can find it in grocery stores everywhere now. It used to be just like, you know, only in Texas, but now it's everywhere. We're only in the South. Anyway, we're out of Rotel, and so okay.
And I'm like, look, it'll be fine.
Yeah,
so it'll be okay. It's fine.
I just grabbed a second can of the fire roasted, and the can of the diced tomatoes. Then I go to gather the other ingredients. I get the red onion. I get the garlic. I get the jalapeno. I get the lime. Where's the cilantro? I knew there was cilantro in here a few days ago.
I used it all for the curry.
And used it all in the curry. But you thought there was.
I thought there was another package in there, and there wasn't.
The parsley that I got the other day for the beef stew.
I thought that there had been no parsley left, and I thought that the parsley was cilantro.
That's the bane of the cilantro parsley mix up. So salsa without cilantro, I'm just like I cannot do this.
You know, there are people who refuse to eat salsa with cilantro.
I know.
Like they think that cilantro is an abomination.
I get it. I get that that there are people like that out there. There's also people who put vegetables in their lasagna. Still doesn't mean I'm going to make it that way. But I finally just do it and it'll be fine. It's good enough. The kids won't notice it in the taco. I'm like, all right. So I start opening the cans and I dump the big can of diced tomatoes into the food processor. And what do I got? I have crushed tomatoes that are on top of like garlic I've already chopped up and jalapeno I've already chopped up and red onion I've already chopped up. So it's not like I can just dump it back into the thing and put it in the fridge to use for another dish. Nope. It's all mixed with all this stuff now. I'm like, oh, crushed tomatoes. Because crushed tomatoes is not just diced tomatoes squished. There's a flavor to it. It's cooked. Crushed tomatoes are cooked. So I'm like, I can't believe I'm doing like this. And you're like, no, it'll be fine. Just do it.
Because we have children who won't eat tacos if there isn't salsa, homemade salsa. So, it is
a terrible homemade
even salsa. Bad homemade salsa is better than no salsa.
I get it. So, I mix it up, I taste it, it's bland. I put in more salt, I put in more red onion. It's not much better, but it'll do. And that's when you said, wait a minute.
I don't think I have any tortillas for taco shells. And I remembered, I've been cooking ground beef and making the taco meat for an hour. And I suddenly dawns on me, last night I made Ben a quesadilla for dinner. And there was like three or four tortillas left in that bag. That means there's only three or four corn tortillas for seven of us, or six of us, because we don't count Lucy, for six of us. And we usually eat like three or four
tortillas.
We usually eat three or four tortillas a piece.
It's the multiplication of tortillas. Oh.
I was not going to trust in Jesus to multiply the tortillas.
Well, trust in Jesus to multiply tortillas if you want to. I just don't think that he cares to multiply our tortillas.
Right. He could.
He could, but he ain't going to do that. Well, actually, it would be kind of cool if we went out there now and there was tortillas in the fridge.
That would be cool. I mean,
I'll tell you all about it.
If I were a greater saint, that would be something I could count on.
If you were a holier woman,
I am not holy enough to multiply tortillas. I'm just not.
So, now what do we do? So, we decided that we put the ground beef, the taco meat, in the fridge, along with the bad salsa.
Tomorrow I'll go to the grocery store, I'll buy some tortillas and cilantro. We'll have tacos Tuesday.
Tacos on Tuesday. It must be a sign. And we ordered pizza.
Yeah.
So just so you know, because we're always talking about all these amazing dishes that whipped up around.
We only talk about the amazing ones. We don't talk about the other 5 days of the week or six days of the week.
We're being authentic here about our failures that along with our successes. So that was dinner tonight. We had pizza at our usual pizza place, which wasn't even that good tonight. I mean, the pizza was okay, but I think they overcooked at least one of the pizzas. Anyway, so let's talk about what we've been watching or listening to in your case. Let's go with your pick, what you've been listening to first.
All right. So one of my Facebook friends tagged me this week and said, you got to check this out. He tagged several people, but he tagged me. I was really flattered because I love it when people like think of me and say, you in particular will like this. It's nice to be thought of. Mm-hmm. So it's a podcast called How Does Music Do That? Did I get the title right?
I'm not sure. I tried to look it up in iTunes and it wasn't right. There will definitely be a link in the show notes, but let me while you talk about it, I'm going to
look
it up.
How Music Does That. That's what it is. How Music Does That. So it's a one-man podcast. The episodes are somewhere between like 10 and 20 minutes long, the
nice
ones I've listened to.
Episodes. So not like us.
Right, not super long. So the guy is, his name is Dale McGowan, and he's a music professor, but he also has a degree in anthropology?
Physical anthropology.
Physical anthropology. So like the biological end of anthropology, not the like the...
Yeah. Evolution and stuff.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, his first episode was about cool. Like, why
what
is...
What makes music cool? What makes cool music?
Right. And he's specifically talking about, like, you know, sort of jazzy, sort of cool, like that sort of idea. And he went into, like, the bio mechanisms of the cerebellum keeping time. And it was great. I was totally hooked. We're talking about music. We're talking about how brains work. I'm all in. And we've listened to 7 episodes now.
So my favorite so far was the second episode that he did called The Strange DNA of a Surf Song.
It was awesome.
Which is that song that you hear at the beginning of the movie Pulp Fiction. If you...
He does play the clip of Pulp Fiction, but he bleeps out the swear words, which there are more than a couple.
Yes, it is Pulp Fiction after all. But but there's that scene in the beginning, and you know the sound of it. I'm not going to play it because I don't have the rights to it, and he can claim fair use because if it's an educational podcast, but I wouldn't necessarily be able to. But the song is by Dick Dale.
It's a surf thrash song.
Yeah, it's surf rock. They didn't have thrash back in 1963.
It kind of thrashes.
Surf rock
song.
And what was cool is we found out that Dick Dale is actually a Maronite, I think, or did he say that? He was Lebanese? Dick Dale was a stage name. From Quincy, Massachusetts, which is like the town next door to us. It's right.
That's where our doctor is.
Right.
Doctor's office is in Quincy.
It was really kind of cool but he talked about like why this song sounded a certain way, why does it sound Middle Eastern, and how does music sound like a particular place?
Okay. What was really fun was that afterwards, like Anthony was talking about, he's like, oh, the Byzantine scale. Like he remembered the term Byzantine scale and he was like all over that.
Well, he was calling out the Byzantine scale in some of the music from the World of Tanks game that I was playing, which was fun. That was really neat. So, I mean, there's some really cool stuff. The titles of episodes, just, you know, When Truman Touches the Wall, which is about the Truman Show movie.
The music at the final scene.
Yes.
The Truman Show.
Let's Get Sad with Galileo's Dad, the masterpiece I never heard of, Cage Unlocked, you know, John Cage.
Which gave me a new appreciation for John Cage. I really liked that episode, actually.
Oh, you know what? I haven't heard this one. The Moment I Surrendered to John Williams. I totally want to.
I know. I saw that title, and I thought that one is going to be very popular around here.
Well, I recently did a podcast on the other podcast we do, Secrets of Movies and TV Shows, The Secrets of John Williams, where we went through all of his music and talked about it. So I'm particularly interested in that one. Anyway, he's got a real nice sense of humor.
Very funny. Like the kids were chuckling along at multiple times during the podcast, which is always a good sign when you can get like a wide audience. Like Bella loved it. Sophie was interested. Ben and Anthony were intrigued. And even Lucy was giggling at the jokes.
Yes.
That's a win.
And, there's even one that's one of the more recent ones, the Jabberwocky of Harry Potter. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff in here. The Bones of Yellow Brick Road.
Right. It's very pop culture music. Like, but he also talks about classical pieces.
Right. And music, like other cultures, too.
Yeah. So he's kind of all over the map in terms of what...
Gives you a music... It's like a music appreciation course.
For people who don't know anything about music, like us.
Right. So a lot of fun. Yeah, highly recommended. Again, I'll put the link to it in the show notes, and you can check it out. So I was recently, the new Star Trek Picard series. I won't go into it here, but I would say you can listen to The Secrets of Star Trek and hear me talk all about that for an hour. But I would just quickly, it was the best first episode of any Star Trek series.
Well, that's not saying much because most Star Trek first episodes kind of stink, right?
Well, yeah, it was No Encounter at Farpoint, but some were better than others. but that's good though. That means
right.
It starts out at a high point, you know. So maybe it gave me better. I would say really, really good, really hopeful. But I
still haven't seen it. So
yes, you have to see it. So. I also watched this week, I rewatched for the first time in many years, probably a decade, Iron Man. We have the Disney Plus now, so, you know, we have all those Marvel Universe ones. And this was the Marvel Cinematic Universe movie that started it all.
I have seen like maybe two of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. At some point, I need to catch up.
Did you watch Thor Ragnarok?
No.
That's the one I would recommend to anyone who hasn't watched the movie.
Like, I haven't seen any of them, and I can still watch that and enjoy it and not feel like I'm lost.
I'd probably have to be sitting there explaining some of it to you.
See, this is the thing.
I mean, there might be a little bit, like, you know who Thor is, you know who the Hulk is. I mean, you probably would be able to get it.
Right. Well, I mean, I know who Thor is in, like, actual Norse mythology.
Okay, I mean, 2 minutes and I would explain who Thor is in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He's actually the same guy.
Actually, curiously, coincidentally, Ben got a Dolores Norse mythology for Christmas, Epiphany?
Book.
Anyway, that's been our bedtime story for the last few weeks, is we've been reading our way through the Norse myths.
I know, it's fun to hear you saying names like Loki and Heimdall and... you know, in Odin from the other room, and I'm thinking, oh, Anthony Hopkins, Idris Elba, Tom Hiddleston, you know, just very funny to hear the names.
Right. I mean, that's honestly the parts of the Marvel Universe that I'm most interested in, is like, I know that there's these Norse god characters in there, and I'm kind of curious.
I kind of want to watch Thor again, the first Thor movie, so that might be worth watching. Thor Ragnarok might be the best of all the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies and the most accessible. Taika Waititi was the director. It's really funny. Got a good sense of humor. So
that's after the Thor was the first one, and then...
Yes, it was the third Thor movie.
The third Thor movie.
Third Thor.
That's a lot of Thor.
Well, I'm sorry, but that's how many there were. Oh, man, you just walked into that one. Anyway, I was watching Iron Man.
Right.
And I was really kind of surprised how much smaller that movie seemed in the grand scheme of things, being the first Marvel movie. At the time, it was a big spectacle movie, but it was just another big superhero movie. The Marvel movies now are big. They're grand in scale. You know, they're grand in the action, and this one was much smaller. I mean, you don't even see the real Iron Man suit till halfway through the movie. It's not even there. It's very interesting, and it was an interesting to go back and watch it. I'm kind of curious. Maybe I'm gonna maybe watch some more of the other Marvel movies from the early days.
Maybe I'll join you.
Okay, all right.
We'll see.
And then the other thing I wanted to mention was the TV show The Good Place,
which I have only seen like one or two episodes of, and I'm really hesitant.
Well, you'd have to watch it from the beginning because each episode is literally labeled chapter 50, chapter 51. I mean, it's a progressive story. You just have
right.
to, you have to, and there's twists in it that you don't want to ruin by watching the end. So there's a bit of spoiler in this a little bit. So if you really don't want to be spoiled by this, the series is ending, and I watched the second to last episode, and I wanted to talk about it, but I don't want to spoil for anybody. So skip ahead like 3 minutes. Or 4 or 5 minutes, and if you don't want to be spoiled, I'll try to avoid too many spoilers. But one of the things that came up is the Good Place's idea of heaven. And the premise is, these people die and they go to the Good Place. That's what they call it, heaven. But it's, and then there's a bad place where there are devils and demons who torment the, you know, the sinners. Or they don't call them sinners, but torment the bad people. And in this life, you do everything you do has a point score attached to it. You do a good deed, you get points. You do a bad thing, points taken off. And at the end of your life, you measure up whether you have enough points to get into heaven. It's the gamification of the afterlife.
Yeah, this is why I do not really...
Right.
Yeah.
Now, it's worth... That said, as wrong as that is, there's actually a good point to it. And there's a lot of real philosophy in this. This is the most philosophical TV show I've ever watched, and it's hysterical. So I gotta give it credit for that. So the perception of heaven, they have this, you know, these characters end up getting into heaven, into the good place. And what they find there is no God in this heaven. And what they find there is that there's all these people there who... They get every single thing they ever wanted. They, at any moment, they have everything that they desire is available instantaneously. And they're all like happiness zombies, they call them. They're just blah. They turn to mush. Their brain turns to mush. There's no anticipation. There's no striving. There's just, yeah, whatever. I'm bored of everything because this is what infinity is like. And they come to the conclusion that what makes life worth living, this life, mortal life, is the idea that we could die, and so you have to live life now before death takes you, you know, that you know, grab onto life and
carpe diem.
Yeah, and that's what the enjoyment of life comes from, is that idea that it could be taken away, and so they come up with this idea of creating this oblivion door where anyone who wants to, who's tired of the afterlife, who's tired of eternity, can just go through this door and they will cease to exist. Period. Gone. Never coming back. Just cease. Annihilated. And no one has to go. There's no time limit. It's just there.
It's an option. It's a choice.
It's right. And just the availability of that choice, of that option, gives people enjoyment in heaven again. And I thought, how strange that is. How strange this idea that heaven would be boring. And then I realized it's because this is a heaven without God.
Well, you know, I've seen that premise before, that not so much that heaven is boring, but that eternal life on this earth would be boring. Like living forever, just like never dying. Right. Eventually you'd get bored, ennui. Like if, especially if everybody just lived forever and ever and ever, there's no... Like, eventually you'd run out of...
Think of spending eternity with your Facebook feed.
Right.
It would just be boring.
Now, I'm not 100% sure I buy it, but I've definitely encountered that as a sort of thought problem.
Well, and I think what the problem is what they're lacking is you can't get bored of God. Like, a heaven without God, yes, would be that way. What makes eternity worth living is infinite love. You can't get bored of infinite love, an infinite loving God. It just doesn't get boring. So it's kind of interesting. It's interesting to see people grapple with this from a secular viewpoint, this idea
right.
of eternal life. This is a non-religious exploration of what it means to have an afterlife and to have morality, because there's a good place and a bad place. The people who end up in the good place and people who end up in the bad place. So it's interesting to see that if for nothing else, that makes it interesting. It's also a very funny show, so I really enjoyed it. This is the fifth season, I think. Anyway, so that's that. I think we should about wrap it up there.
Okay.
Yeah,
sure.
I think that's we're coming up on an hour, and that's about long enough for us to talk. So we do want to, before we head out, we want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets.
Indeed.
Daphne M., Tim G., Ramses.
Ramses.
That's the name he or she put down. Ramses! I picture Yul Brynner, so just let's be clear.
I do not.
If you are not bald, Ramses, and you speak with this stentorian voice, I'm going to be a little disappointed. But thank you, Ramses. David W. and Daniel V., their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com /give. So that's it from us. If you have any comments on anything we talked about or you want to talk about anything else, let us know by commenting at sqpn.com/bets, B-E-T-T-S, or the SQPN Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And of course, I'll put links to the podcast, the How the Music Does That podcast, and the other things that might have links in the show notes on sqpn.com. Be sure to subscribe if you haven't done so. Subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, all the directories, we're everywhere we can be, including your favorite podcast app or on the SQPN YouTube channel, where if you do subscribe there, make sure to hit the bell to get those notifications of new episodes. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.